This is the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. I'm Melissa Griffin, Executive Director here at the Arts Center. In this podcast, we discuss how art and life blend. This is exciting for me today because my guest is singer-songwriter Jay Reese, which means we have live music on the podcast today. Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be so much fun. So we're going to hear a couple of pieces of songs from you today. We're also going to hear a new release in its entirety. So that's really great. Before we get to that, though, this is always the question that I have on my mind when I meet musicians. Not that we've just met. By the way, it's great to see you again.
You
it's
too.
Been like a year, other yeah. than this Saturday when we worked together out at the park for Art in the Park.
It's been a strange year of hibernation, but it's been good because it's allowed me to do all of the behind-the-scenes work on like the actual songwriting to have all this new material to present. So
wonderful.
It's been good.
Wonderful. So the question that I have is, what is your writing process really like?
Oh, boy.
Do you have melodies and rhythms and stuff just bouncing around in your head all the time and then you add lyrics later?
Yes and no. My process is weird in that it's more of like a freak of nature occurrence that I cannot stop writing songs.
Really?
They hit when they want to. They land fully sometimes, some are half-birthed. It just depends on what story I'm telling. And the process is kind of like ironed itself out as far as my understanding of it over the past year, given all this time for me to just kind of hibernate and distance myself from everything. Over quarantine, I was able to like really sit down and be like, okay, what do I do and how do I do it? You know? And so my friend Lou, he's my spiritual advisor. We joke about that. And he does my card readings, my tarot readings. And he named me the Bard like a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so I was like, Lou, what does that even mean? And he's like, honey, bards sing demons to sleep. They sing our truths back to us so we can learn from them. And I was like, well, no pressure, man, right? He started laughing. He was like, no, all you have to do is tell the stories. And I was like, what do you mean? And he basically told me just to collect the stories of those around me. So like keeping that in mind and applying it to the songwriting process, that's all I've been doing, is collecting other people's stories, adding my own story, and then making it something that we can all universally learn from. So it's all of these themes of basically what it means to be human and like the spectrum of existence, but also super personal details that people can connect with, because at our core, like all humans are our stories, you know? And I feel like there's this inherent need for us to hear stories and also to tell them. So I think that the process, yes, the melodies come out easily for me. And I think that's just because I've been around music and in music so long that I'm not overthinking it at this point. I'm just like, okay, this one's landing. Let me get my guitar, you know? Or like if you go through my phone voice memos, it's just nonsense. It's like hours of just half placed ideas and like random little melodies that I'm like, oh, this could sound cool, you know? And then one of the ones I'm going to play today is similar to that. It's actually one of my favorite ones to write. One Inch Five Mississippi Whiskey is somebody else's story, but it's also my own. And that one woke me up in the middle of the night.
Really?
And literally was like, if you don't get it now, kid, you're gonna miss it. Yeah.
So that must make your music more relatable to people.
Yes, a lot of the time. And especially when I introduce the stories of the characters that I come in contact with the songs, it gives it a whole new meaning at that point, because people are able to connect with it. They're like, wait, okay, now I see what you're doing. Now I see how this right. is representative of something bigger, but also like it's everyday stuff.
And you know? So they know what to listen for.
Exactly.
And what to kind of...
Plus it makes them part of it. I think it brings them into the picture as well. And it makes them part of the storytelling at that point. So
absolutely.
It's been fun.
So when I met my husband, mm-hmm. who he sings, he writes music, and he does the same thing with the voice memos. And before voice memos were a thing, he used to call people and say, don't answer, so I can leave this voice message.
Let me get this idea out.
And it would be some beat or some...
Just nonsense to everybody else. Yep.
Some terrible sounding lyrics, and at first terrible. But it was just like he needed to put it down, and so he would be driving and do it on his voice memos. That's pretty cool.
My friends Ryan and Wade and I joke joke about it's unearthing the bones.
Yeah.
So like when you find the skeleton of a song, you want to dust off those bones as fast as possible. And then you get to go back and be like, oh, we'll add a little flesh here. We'll add a limb there. Yeah. We'll add some eyes, you know. So it's each song is its own thing. It's its own entity and it's alive. And so every time you play it, it's going to be different because it is an ever evolving thing. And it's funny, like, I'm very thankful that I only have the voice memo experience and not the calling other people, because I don't think I'd have any friends at that point if I had to call and leave messages.
So is there a subject matter that you gravitate toward, or is there some things that you love more than others to write about, or they just kind of come out naturally?
It's more of a natural, organic process. I do feel compelled much/most of the time to really highlight mental wellness and mental health, because I think that that is one of the most stigmatized, unnecessarily stigmatized aspects of our society, especially in America. Like, we just bury in bottle and hope for the best. And right now, I mean, you what you plant grows, you know? And so I think that by, like, just bringing it forward, not only that, you reclaim power over the things that make you feel powerless when you talk about them and when you sing about them and when you tell the stories about, you know, struggling in different ways, because we all struggle.
Right.
So,
well, sure. And, you know, you think about different genres of music, and it's like, whether it's a tear in your beer or whether you're screaming at the top of your lungs, like each genre has that.
The core emotion is
there. Yeah. That same thing that people naturally can connect to.
It's a release.
Yes, exactly. So tell me about what's been your favorite song to write, and what's the story, and why is it your favorite song that you wrote?
So, well, I feel like my favorite changes weekly, but like my favorite that's been a favorite for since I wrote it is 1-inch 5 Mississippi Whiskey. And whenever COVID was in its incubation stages, before they had called the quarantine, and when normal, in air quotes, life was still burning us all at both ends, I was bartending at this place in Covington, and your typical bougie Italian restaurant bar, and I had this set of regulars who would walk across the street. They worked across the street, and it was two sets of twins. And in the magic realm, in the spiritual realm, twins are very potent magic. They represent a lot of power contained in, you know, human form. And so that was my first, like, little, you know, signal of, like, okay, something's up. And so I hadn't really started writing the intense stories that I'm writing now. And this was kind of like my segue into that. They walked in. I met them. The previous bartender who I was taking the place of introduced me and was like, hey, take care of these regulars. They'll take care of you. Well, one of them, she climbed up on the bar stool and looked me in the eye, and she was like, darling, I need a 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey for my mouth. And I've bartended for years, but I've never heard anybody order a drink like that. And so I kind of like looked up, and I was like, the universe is just tossing blues songs on the bar, man. So I was like, all right. And for anybody who doesn't know, 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey is more than 1 inch of whiskey in a glass. It's, you count 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. It's about half a cup of whiskey. And this was breakfast.
Wow.
For this person. So I am a recovering alcoholic, and so it kind of struck me, because I've, you know, I've had those 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey mornings more than I would like to admit. And so in that moment, I kind of was struck by that and made a hardcore mental note of that line. I was like, that has to be a lyric. And so I went home and mulled it over and just thought about who those characters were as well. Like, how would I describe these people to somebody who's never seen them, doesn't know them? What would I describe them as? And a lot of the times I feel like a character, and I feel like I've got wings just sewn shut into this, you know, into these shoulder blades and the spinal column. And it's heavy a lot of the time. And it's hard to be a human in this weird human realm. And so I call myself a dragon sometimes. And I was like, that's it, they're dragons. And so, like, running with that imagery of just, if you're sitting at a bar and all of a sudden a bunch of dragons walk in, you're going to swivel on your stool and be like, okay, what's up? You know? So I wanted the song to sound like that. And it does. And it tells the story of these four magical beings who, you know, swear reality is out to get them at this point. And so the chorus is, she says, I need a 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey. Just need a little drop of fire in the gut. Because I swear lately it really feels like reality's out to get me. Just need a 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey. It's my favorite because it's so poetic and it's so like visual. It's such a visual song.
Right.
And the music that goes with it too. I don't know. That kind of just fell into my lap and I was like, well, that works, you know? So
let's hear a piece of it.
Cool.
I tend to the bar downtown and I see every kind. The ones I carry with me, the ones who stay in mind. The dragons bound in human form with wings strapped in their spine. They don't know what to do and you can see it in their eyes. Welcome them with open arms to take a seat around the well. Listen to their stories and I'll map their paths through hell. One fire-breathing comet tail knows just how hard it is. The light within her eyes, it fades as she leans to fire. She says, I need a 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey. Need a little drop of fire in my gut. Cause I swear lately it really feels like reality's out to get me. Just need a 1-inch 5 Mississippi whiskey.
You're so right. There's a visual there.
It's, with the music, too, it just works. Yeah. I don't know.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all.
By the way, the first time music has been played on the podcast.
Yes.
Exactly.
Just christened it.
So let's backtrack a little bit, Jay. Yeah. How did you get your start in music?
So I come from a musical family. Both sides of my family, guitarists, singers, songwriters, opera singers, jazz pianists, like the list goes on. And I've always been around music. So a lot of my musical roots, as far as like my rhythmic playing, my songwriting, it's real Cajun. And you wouldn't expect it because looking at me, listening to me, talking to me, Cajun is not the first word that comes to your mind, probably. But a lot of it is rooted in Cajun rhythms and Cajun structures. And I was surrounded by Cajun music as a kid. And so that had a major role in shaping the way I write now, I think, subconsciously. I didn't even realize it until I was like, wait, this is just like a two-step that's weird, you know? So my friend Charles and I call it Queer Kid Cajun. And so it's this this strange blend, but it's also a lot of like jazzy and hip-hop style stuff too. My songwriting began as a kid.
Were you playing guitar at that time too?
I got a guitar at age 8 and my older cousins would show me chords, but I wasn't playing to the extent that I'm playing now. I think playing guitar became a lifeline for me as a teenager. I had some serious struggles with alcohol and drugs. And so like music was the one thing that tethered me to myself and my place in this realm. And so it's always been that little lifeboat, you know? And
sure.
So I think that the guitar playing has definitely evolved over the years as I have, and it's changed so much just over the past 3 years. And I think it's because I finally like stopped running, sat down with what hurt and was like, all right, we got to get a song out of this, fam, because I can't carry you anymore, you know? So it's been more of like a growth of me personally and like a journey of healing. The music now is completely different because I'm different.
Yeah, that makes sense that your art would change with
exactly.
you as you grow. Absolutely. And of course, as you develop skills and things over the course of time, because starting at 8 and you can tell in the way that you present your music and that it is part of you.
It's, oh, absolutely.
It's not something that's
there's no separating the two.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the pandemic earlier. Things are obviously different now than they were pre-pandemic. How did the pandemic impact your music and your gig opportunities and the push for a career as a musician?
For me personally, the time to slow down was a double-edged sword, but it was a gift in hindsight. And our world runs on the busy, and it runs on the empty busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for a lot of us, we didn't get time to slow down. And everybody's so burnt out. And you can see it. People aren't even trying to hide it anymore, but at the same time, they're still trying to hide it. And I'm like, bruh, just be honest. Like, say you're tired. It's okay, right. You know? So I think that, like, for me, I had just gotten gig residencies at, like, several different places, monthly shows, and I was super excited and overnight lost all of it. And I was like, well, okay, now what? But I realized that I wasn't ready. I was playing other people's music still. I wrote damn near 100 songs over quarantine.
Wow.
So, like, not all of them are hits, you know, maybe got 40, 50 good ones, but, like, we just sat down and told stories, you know? And so I did it also as a way to make myself feel better and to get the busy out of my head. But as far as, like, a career, there's no other option at this point. Like you said, you can't separate the two. Why would I try? If I have this ability, it's not normal. I'm not normal, you know? And I say normal in air quotes, but, like, I don't want to be the person I was before. You know, now that I've had this time to grow and to do the work and to sit and write the songs, all I want to do is keep sitting and write the songs, you know? So
right.
I feel spoiled that I get to do this too and that people want to listen. So now going forward, it's not about making it. It's just about telling the stories. And it's about making myself feel better by telling the stories and by finding the gems, you know, because all these are lessons put poetically to music, you know? To me, it's more than that because I'm giving, but I'm also getting, you know?
Sure.
So it's a cool thing. I don't know.
So we're going to take a quick break, but yeah. I'm going to get you to tell me a story about rolling some dice and getting a random tattoo.
Yep.
Which, of course, led to a song, which we're not going to hear that song. We're going to hear another song that I think probably has a story behind it as well.
Yes.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in 30 seconds. Thanks for listening to the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. I'm Melissa Griffin talking today with singer-songwriter and good friend Jay Reese. So, tell me the story about how a person gets a tattoo based on rolling some dice. What?
<Yes. laughs> So I got to spend about a month and some change, a month and a half in Massachusetts up in March and April. And I was staying with my manager, Monica, who is like the most wholesome motherly figure you could ever meet in your life, and she just gets stuck with me, this little delinquent. But it's a really funny dynamic. And so I always tell her, I'm like, oh, I need to get that tattooed, whatever that is, you know, a message or a lesson, I need to get that tattooed so I remember it. And she's like, or you could just draw a picture. So we went to Salem, because Salem's been on my bucket list. So we packed up the car with a picnic and went and, you know, brought some snacks and walked around and did like the touristy thing at first. But then I was like, if I'm going to find something creepy and, you know, worthwhile in Salem, it's going to be at an antique shop. So we went antique shopping and did that. And I was like, all right, you know, and I was satisfied with my Salem experience at that point. But as we're driving out, we pass a tattoo shop. It looked like something out of like a Christopher Nolan movie, like dimly lit, but these bright neon lights. And I like looked wistfully out the window as we drove by and she's like, do you want to get a tattoo? And I about near fell out my seat. I was like, duh. And so she turns the car around. I was like, do you have a fever? Are you okay? And she walks in with me and they have this get what you get special. So you pay $100 and you roll this 100-sided dice block. And whatever number it lands on, they take this little book out of this glass case and it says get what you get on top. And they flip through and it's all of these like simple but detailed enough designs. But I told the guy, I was like, look, I don't know you. I don't know what you're about. I don't know what this book's about. So if I roll this and I get something like terrible, I'm going to give you $20 more and I'm going to roll again. Okay. And he was like, he goes, where are you from? I was like, just north of New Orleans. And he was like, all right, bet. So I paid him $100. And the first thing I got, you know, it just wasn't me. So
right.
I put another 20 on the counter and rolled again, and number 46 popped up. And I was like, all right, well, what's 46? So he flips in the book, and it's this hand holding a dagger. And so at that point, I had some symbols, some tarot symbols appear throughout the trip. And before the trip, I found the Queen of Swords tarot card. I had parked the car downtown to get food the night before I flew out. And Lou had done a reading that week, and the Ace of Swords literally threw itself out the deck. And sword is representative of the mind. And having the Ace of Swords, the Queen of Swords, and then the feminine representation of the dagger, which is a smaller version of the sword, I was like, all right, bet that's the one. So this this kid named Alex Finnerty tattooed this on my arm. So now I have a tattoo from Salem. And I was like, that's the best souvenir I could have gotten in one of the most haunted places in America. So right. Very happy with it.
You know, I don't have any tattoos. And so it's hard for me to relate because I've never found a symbol or anything that I thought, yeah, I want to live with this for the rest of my life. And so leaving that up to chance some random book would be like, no, not even a little bit. But I also don't like needles. So there's like a double.
Yeah. Tattoos are not for you.
Right. So tell me about the story of the song called Horses.
So Horses is a song about depression and about mental illness. And it tells not only the story of an individual's depression and mental illness, but it also tells the story from the point of view of the mother. Monica always tells me a mother's only as happy as her saddest child. And so when I was visiting with her, we went to visit one of her friends who has horses. And this friend is no stranger to depression, has, you know, children who suffer from it. And like, I really connected with them. And side note, I'm terrified of horses.
Really?
I got thrown as a kid and like, was just like, look, I'm gonna respect you from like 20 yards away. And so I pet one of the horses there. And like, that was like a big deal for me. I was like, dude, I'm not freaking out right now. And this, it was a really gentle animal, but it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, the idea that horses can smell fear, what else can they smell? You know, can they smell the sadness? And so the song Horses, it's just the story of that, but it's a mother singing to a child. And so it's tender and it's intimate, but also like it tells the story of all of our sad. A lot of the times we try to hide it, but you can see it, you know, you can see it in somebody's eyes. You can see it in the way they move through the world. And So
is this a story about other people who deal with depression and sadness, or are there pieces of you in this
song? Absolutely. There's pieces of me in every song I write, but I think that the one specifically about mental health, I've struggled with depression since I was a kid. I can remember feeling depressed as early as like 8, like the age of reason. I was like, well, damn, man, we got messed up from the jump. But it's always been something that I've been very hyper aware of too. And so like when I recognize it in other people, I just want to reach out and be like, you're not alone. And the way I do that now is with these songs. And so Horses is basically a representation of that. It's all of our story. Anybody who struggles, it's your story. And it's the story of all of the motherly feminine energy in the world cradling you.
So let's hear a piece of it.
Cool.
Baby, are you so sick? The horses smell it on your skin. Is it something drastic? Something festering within. See, mama's only as happy as her saddest babe. Mama ain't seen the sunshine in a whole lot of days. Baby, where's it hurt? Go on and tell me how it stings. I will pull you close and whisper while the wild horses sing. Baby, are you so sick? I can see it in your eyes. If you only knew your magic, maybe you'd never hear the lies. 'Cause mama's only as happy is her saddest bed. Mama ain't seen the sunshine in a whole lot of days.
It's hauntingly beautiful.
that's the goal. My friend who inspired the song Who Has the Horses calls depression soul sick. And so whenever I learned that, I was like, oof, okay, that's a song. Yeah. So,
well, as a mom myself, I can relate to, you know, even like the smallest little boo-boo makes your heart hurt. Or the smallest
baby.
Disappointment that they have, like, leaves this deep, like,
wound
feeling on you. It's kind of a crazy innate thing. But, you know, the way that you're relating this, that experience in a song is it's beautiful. So you have released some new work recently.
Yes.
How many songs have you officially released in the last, what is it, month or two?
I only have like 3 songs recorded, which is, that's an entirely different the songwriting happens all day every day. Like I said, I've written like 100 songs over quarantine, and I need to get in the studio. I need to get stuff recorded. I want to release a whole album. It's just ironing down the time to do it. My crew is kind of stretched, but when we get together, we make the most of it. We recorded 2 songs in like 24 hours total time.
Uh-huh.
We released one of them. One's on Spotify now. That's Free Fall. We released that on 420. And then Vagabond Hearts will be coming out next month. And that's the one that's, I think we got something special. So
awesome. So tell us about Vagabond Hearts.
I wrote this in a tent on the side of a mountain in Tennessee after meeting an elderly Cherokee man and helping him save some kittens. He's this elderly Cherokee man who I met. I was camping up there with a friend of mine, and on the edge of the park we were tent camping in, there was this Indian village trading post is what the sign said. And I was like, all right, I'll bite. Like, I'm curious. So I went in. And this dude, like, I wasn't even in the door. And he looked at me and he was like, oh boy, here comes trouble. I was like, man, how'd you know? Like, so we like bantered back and forth. And when I tell you there were 4 things in this man's store, there were 4 things in this man's store. There were cobwebs. There were skeletons of critters that I don't even know what they are. The chupacabra might have been in there. But it was just him and some cats. And I realized, I was like, this dude's like alone, man, you know? So window shopped of the 4 items and then, you know, said my goodbyes and went back to our campsite. And about an hour later, it's still eating me. I was like, all right, I got to befriend this guy. So we were cooking dinner, my friend and I made a plate and I rode back up to the edge of the park and brought him a plate. And he's like, trouble you back? He was like, I wasn't expecting you back so soon, but I was like, I come bearing gifts, you know? And he saw that it was food and he was like, okay, you're cool, you can hang out. So like, he started showing me, he hand built this place from literally like logs and like rock slabs. He owns a rock quarry on the edge of the property. And I was just amazed that this human being was a person. Like, I had never heard stories. Like, he was telling me about growing up on the reservation. He showed me his official reservation card and like just listening to his stories. So I started taking notes and I realized that all of the kittens that were hanging around the place were in bad shape. Their eyes were infected and none of them could open their eyes. So I FaceTimed Monica. She's a vet. We got to help these kittens. And she was like, okay. And she just rolls with whatever I like call her with at this point. It's always something weird and it's always a story. But she told me what to do. The nearest store was a Dollar General 26 miles away. I was like, all right, dude, I'll be back. Here's your food. I'm going to go get the kittens what they need and then we're going to doctor them up. And he's like, you're some nice stranger. And I was like, maybe so. Maybe this is penance for being a crap person for so long. Who knows? But so I rode the 26 miles to the Dollar General. And on the ride back, I started humming this phrase, take it slow. And I was like, all right. Because I noticed how slowly he went with everything. And I was like, oh, that might be the secret. You know, like that might be it. So because I'm like the Tasmanian devil in my head most of the time, just spinning. So I was humming this melody line got back, helped them fix up the kittens, their eyes, and, you know, said my goodbyes, went back to my tent and just started writing. And so I always bring my guitar with me wherever I go, if I'm camping, just because something like this might happen. And so I wrote down the rough melody and started figuring out how to tell the story. And this was right after I had written 1-inch 5 Mississippi Whiskey. So I kind of had a formula for, okay, set up the visual, set up what you want it to look like, but also how you want it to sound with what you want it to look like, you know, create a mind's eye view using noise. And so that's how Vagabond Hearts came to be. And it's just the story of, the lyrics are, met the shadow of my soul on the hillside of a mountain, patient with a steady gaze, it taught me how to see. It was there that I found out how to recognize the lesson that what is good inside of you is all that you should be. And so it tells the story of us always wanting more, but having everything we need. And if we just take it slow, we can see that more.
So you just described the answer to my first question about what is your writing process like? Like, it just unfolded like that with a short little phrase,
yeah.
Take it slow, and then it went from there.
Yeah, Vagabond Hearts was definitely more of a process move, and it was stages of it. And then when I got back and showed my drummer, Wade, he was like, oh, you've been writing. And I was like, yeah. And so it's cool.
So that's awesome. This is a new release. It's Vagabond Hearts.
Yep.
And we're going to hear it in its entirety right here on the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast.
Like the shadow of my soul on the hillside of a mountain, patient with a steady gaze, it taught me how to see. It was there that I found out how to recognize the lesson. What is good inside of you is all that you should be. These vagabond hearts, they keep yearning, trying to find a way to mow. These vagabond souls, they'll keep hurting till they learn to take it slow, take it slow. Take it slow. Kittens dancing in the garden, chasing butterflies for fun. What is the lesson? I seek the lesson like a knot that's come under. These vagabond hearts, they keep yearning, trying to find a way to mow. These vagabond souls, they'll keep hurting till they learn. Take it slow, take it slow. Take it slow. If I could, then I would fix it, all the parts of you that hurt. If I could, then I would take it, all the embers till they burn. These vagabond hearts, these vagabond hearts. Ooh, ooh. Take They keep yearning, trying to find a way to mow these vagabond souls. They'll keep hurting till they learn to take it slow, take it slow. Take it slow.
Jay Reese on the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. Mm-hmm. Vagabond Hearts. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having me.
So I know that people are going to want to find you after this. Where can they find you online or
I have... Most of my stuff gets posted to my Instagram account, j.reese_. I also have a music Facebook. If you search j.reese on Facebook, it should pop up. I'm also launching a Patreon account this week, so I can start, you know, trying to get some funds in so I can keep doing what I'm doing and strictly focus on this. Funds also go to supporting an album and that whole process. So
awesome.
So Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon.
And you have some music on Spotify as well?
I do have music on Spotify. I have two songs right now. One of them was recorded a few years ago. It's called Obvious. Different feel, still cool. And then the one we just released, Free Fall, is on there as well. And then Vagabond Hearts will be up next month. So.
And is Free Fall the one that you have a video?
I do. Stinky Mud Photography, actually. Based in Ponchatoula, Ryan is awesome. I think y'all are having him on the podcast as well, which is really, really cool that
he's coming in soon.
We kind of Venn diagrammed today. but yeah, he did the video. He's brilliant. It came out exactly how I saw it in my head. And we had so much fun. We did that video. We shot it, edited it, and released it in 24 hours.
Wow.
So yeah, he's a wizard, man. Yeah. It was awesome.
And so that we can actually see on your Instagram page,
yes.
Right?
Also, perfect. That one's on YouTube, too. It's on the music Facebook. They're all linked. So mm-hmm. If you hit one of them, you should find the links to the others. So
awesome. So do you have a favorite quote or anything else you want to leave us with before you go?
Something I always say jokingly is 10 seconds at a time because it helps me stay sober from booze. But at the same time, like, the only way out is through. So whatever it is you're dealing with, whoever's listening out there, the only way out is through. You might as well pack up and start walking. So
nice. Thank you so much today, Jay. Jay Reese has been my guest. I'm Melissa Griffin. You've been listening to the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. Thank you for joining us. Hope you got some inspiration here today to go out and have a creative day.